Welcome all of those who have come a little later. I want to also welcome those who have come as guests to the temple, first time or second time or whatever. It is a little full, but we have opened the windows, so it will be good. We'll also greet my internet audience. I believe this is on the internet. Yes. Welcome. And I want to greet all of the temple devotees from Ljubljana and our congregation. I feel I have a very important subject today to discuss. I was forced to look into this subject because one day in our temple we saw that the donation box had been opened. It was broken and all the donations which people had given for the worship of the Lord had been stolen. We were concerned who had done this type of thievery, which is very, very, very bad. So I was living in the temple and I had given that evening a lecture, not related, and then in the evening the temple emptied, all the people came out of the temple room, and somehow I needed to do some personal chanting, so I sat a little bit to be undisturbed. I sat in the window, you know, you could go sit in the window and then no one could see you. Then it was around 10 o'clock in the night. And I was still there. I saw something which has moved me very much. The temple door opened and a devotee came. He was dressed in ordinary cloth and he went before the altar and he cried, and I could hear what he was saying. He said, "My Lord, please forgive me. Why am I like this? I want to worship you, but at the same time I steal from you." And then some more like this. He was really crying. And then he took out of his, you know, from his vest an envelope and he placed it to where the donation box was. was the thief who had stolen, and then he had a change of mind. How can I steal from the Lord? And he returned the money. Next morning, someone found the envelope, and it was much more than the thief had stolen. He had, in other words, added more. I decided I will speak to this thief in 10 years, because he was troubled. If I would now go and talk to him, he would be more troubled. But I didn't find him after some time. He left our temple. Now, I do not know. Maybe he's in some other temple. But for a long, long time, I was thinking about this, that he wants to do one thing, that is to worship Krishna, but there's another nature, a second nature, which sometimes is even stronger than his, let us call it, spiritual side. My spiritual master spoke about this. He said that there is a spiritual nature, he called it a constitutional nature, and then there is a second nature, which is the conditioned nature, the material nature. No? And he says, sometimes there is no problem. They go very nicely together. But at other times, there is a great problem when they are not in harmony with each other. And when one side, the material side, acts in a way which makes the spiritual side tremble and cry, like in the case of my little analogy. Although we may not be as drastic in our struggle with these two sides as the thief, the devotee thief, don't we all have this problem that sometimes we appear to be divided souls, divided hearts? One Saint Paul expressed it: what I would like to do, that I do not do. And what I don't like to do, that is what I do. he expressed it in a nice way. The same point is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, the great devotee of Krishna, comes before Krishna. Wow, this is a wonderful decoration. It's very full of light today. Arjuna, the great devotee of Krishna, comes to Krishna and he is troubled. He has a pain in his heart and he says, "My Lord, I have a question." He says, "By what are we sometimes forced to act even against our will?" It's like maybe some criminal is in me and he forces me to do that which I do not really wish. When I was a young boy, I lived on an otok. Not in Croatia. Sometimes Croatians think this is the only country which has otoks. It's not true. I was living on the island of Fehmarn. Some of you may know. Gaur Krishna has visited with me this island. Beautiful island. There I I was known to the professor of the island. He was the only professor in the island. He came from Hamburg, but somehow he had become a drunkard. And now he was on the island a slave of wine and whiskey. He lived on the streets. He didn't have a home of his own self. When the winter came, he sometimes stole a bicycle to be put into prison for 1 or 2 months so that he would have some heating system. He was known as Fritz Monarch. Monarch means a king, and Fritz means a beggar, the beggar king, Fritz Monarch, and he was my friend. He liked me very much, and I must tell you, I've never met a person who was more of an intellectual and more learned than Fritz Monarch. One day, I was very much in a hurry to come home. I saw Fritz Monarch was sleeping on a bench. He had drunken too much, like always. So I didn't have any time for any philosophical discussion. So I wanted to walk around the bench without him noticing me, because whenever he saw me, he would stop me and we would have philosophical discussions. So I had no time. I went around the bench, but Fritz Monarch had seen me and he opened his eyes. He said, "Stop." I said, "I have no time." "Stop. I have a question for you. Who created man? God or the devil?" I said, "I really have no time." He said, "No, this is a serious question. Answer the question." So I was coming from a Christian background. I said, "How can you dare to ask such a question? Of course, God created the human being." Fritz Monarch went like this. "Listen to my story." And he told me a story which I have never forgotten. And I will tell this story to you today, because it has a deep, deep, deep import. He said, the devil one day felt lonely, and he had too much to do, so he created a human being from some clay. Clay means clean. But no matter how much he tried, he couldn't give life and not a face to his creature. He tried to, but it was not living and it had no proper face. At that time, said Fritz Monarch, all the mice could fly, and one mouse, flying mouse, came to the devil and said, "I can bring you a face and I can bring you life. A face can only be created by God, and similarly, life can only be created by God." So the mouse flew right into the bathroom of God. God had just finished his morning bath, and he took his towel and washed his, dried his face, and at the end he went, sneezed. Into the towel, and then he put the towel by the side. "Idealnost," thought the mouse. And it took the towel, it flew down to the earth, and he brought the towel to the devil. "Here, this is all you need. Put the towel on the head of your being. In that towel there's the face of God and there is the breath of God, the life. So the devil put it around his little monster or his little creature, his little Frankenstein, you know. And when he took the towel off, it had a face like you and me. And it had life. And it started to say, "What should I do, Master?" The devil said, "Dobro, dobro." And he was just about to give him the first order when God came. God was not satisfied. He said, "He belongs to me." "No," said the devil, "he belongs to me." "No," said God, "you created the body, but I created the face." Face means character. "And I gave it life. So he is half yours, but the other half is mine. He's mine." "Wow," I said. "Yes, so answer my question. Who created man?" said Fritz Monarch. I'm still thinking about this question. I think it makes a very deep point. That is why a point which explains why we are so conflicted sometimes. Why there is a side which wants to go to the west while another side in us wants to go to the east. One side in us wants God realization, or we call it Krishna consciousness, so much, and it is willing to do anything for this. But then there's this other side, which in some of our us is stronger, in others it is hopefully weaker, and in others it is clearly and visibly weaker. There's this material side, but there is there's a struggle between the two sides. And this is what we call in psychology, there's a divided heart. No? Victor Hugo, you write him like Hugo, like he says, "I am a battlefield of a struggle. Sometimes the higher man wins, sometimes the lower. Sometimes bad things come from my mouth, and sometimes good things. I'm sometimes a desert with sand, and sometimes a well, a deep well with clear drinking water." Two sides. And I think you all can find these two sides in the morning when it's time to wake up. There's one side, "I really should get up. I know it's the best time for my spiritual practice. I know." Yes, no? Or for you who are not in the morning in spiritual practice, who need to go to the university or high school, in the morning time, I said, "I know I should get up, it's better for me, it's more healthy." And then there is the other side, it says, "Come on, don't be a fanatic." sleep just a little bit longer. You know, and that side is also there. The side is there when you are eating and you think, "Bono, yes, I'm Bono. I'm full." "No, I'm already fat, like the mayor of the town. You know, I can't go any better. This is not good. I should do some sport. Yes. And then there's this one piece of pizza. It's really very good. It is directly imported from the spiritual world in Italy. You know what I mean. Fritz Monarch, coming back to my story, said, "Do you know why I am like this? I'm a slave to whiskey and wine. I don't lead the life which I should live, because I was not careful enough. And my other side, the side which is created, which is worldly, you know, mundane, has become stronger. And now it's too late for me. I am an old man. But you, my little boy, you should not be like me." And then he closed his eyes, and I think, and he said, "I think you should become a monk. This is better than me." I always took it very serious. After all, he was the most intelligent man I've ever met, who lost the battle inside of him. But intelligent he is. He died an early death, a slave to wine and whiskey. So I want to now, in the last part of my little lecture, give you some ideas what you could do so that your spiritual side in you becomes more strong. Please listen now very attentively, because this might help you very much in your life. This might help you to be victorious in your own struggle, in your own growth, in your own spiritual development. Krishna thought for a moment when Arjuna had asked him the question, "By what are we forced to act sometimes contrary to our real desires?" Krishna said, analyzed the problem. He said, "It is karma, karma esha, krodha esha." He spoke of karma as the all-devouring enemy of this world. Karma means a few things. Material desires is one. Craving is a more fine word, you know. Greed, it means that the ability to desire. This is and to desire for our own satisfaction. There's another word which means something very similar. It's called prema. It means also to desire, but it is desire to love God. No? Lust, material desire for my own selfish interest is one thing that drives me crazy sometimes. And the other is love, love for Krishna, that can connect me to my real life. When Krishna was confronted with this question, he said, "There are only two things which you can do in your desire to develop genuine love." He says, "You must make a practice and you must learn to say no. These two things are necessary." to say no to what is harmful to you and to practice the good things which are favorable and which strengthen your spiritual thing. Without these two, you will not be successful. But if you learn to say no to your lower nature, and you learn to enter a regular spiritual practice, my dear devotees, then you will be very, very successful. I want to speak about practice. There was once a man in India who was in charge of a family. He had a little family. So one day a strong man from the village came. He was, before his eyes, beating up his son, the man's son, and he was offering, or let me say, hurling offenses towards the wife. He was almost grabbing the wife and, you know, offending her before her husband. Then he said, "I'm going now. Give me all your money. I will return in 1 year from now. And then I really will beat you and your wife and your children and take everything." So the man felt threatened in 1 year. And this strong man was such a criminal that the whole village was afraid of him. He could do practically whatever he wanted. No one dared to step into his way. The man went to a saint and said, "What can I do?" The saint said, I've walked by your house. Every day you should carry the newborn calf up the hill and down. And then when after 1 year the man comes, there's no problem. So our man thought, "Well, he's a saint, I don't understand." And so he took that same day the calf up, went up the hill and went down. He did this the morning, the next morning, and after 1 week, the calf began to grow. It really became almost like a grown-up cow. And it loved to be carried, you know. So every day he was carrying his growing calf, and in this way he developed a physical body which looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger in his better days. He really developed muscles, arm muscles, leg muscles, chest muscles, like a gorilla he looked. And then after a year, the Kriminalnuts, criminal person, came in the, made his visit, and he saw our strong man there, and he said, "Ureru, ureru." "Everything is fine. Good. I wish you a wonderful day." And he went away before it was too late. So this is something which I recommend to you also. Not every day a calf up the hill, but do a spiritual practice every day. Do it very good, and you will see how some inner strengths or some spiritual strengths will develop. Some of you are knowing of a spiritual practice, but you are not so regular. You are irregular. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not do. Then 2 days you do, then 5 days you are busy in other things, and then you complain. You have no spiritual muscles. You are not. You are weak when that other side in you, that material side in you, becomes strong and so on. Yes, that is what I wanted to tell you this afternoon in the Ljubljana temple. I hope you can profit from this. I hope you can recognize yourself in the story of Fritz Monarch. I think it will help you to keep this a little bit in mind. My own experience in spiritual life has been, I have focused very much on one practice, that is the chanting of Krishna's holy name. And I have become very convinced that this practice gives me all the knowledge which I need, and also the inner joy. You know, spiritual practice without inner joy is do something wrong if it is a force. But if you do it properly, it's a very joyfully performed. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. This process is joyfully performed. Huh? It is like this. And I focus all my attention on the chanting, and I personally can only recommend to you. It has really helped me. It has changed me. I'm sometimes really surprised how it has changed me to the better. And I'm very grateful, and I can only say it works very much. So you are very much invited to join us for this practice of singing the holy name. We are on a marathon here. We have singing since 2 days, I believe. And we will soon continue, I think. Good. So I have come to an end. I want to see if you, who are known for your highly intellectual nature, who are full of questions, I saw this morning, if you have any questions, you are welcome to ask them now. Hare Krishna. How do you like the subject? It has something to do with us, isn't it? It has something to do with us. Abhyasa, says Krishna, vairagyena, by practice and by vairagya, means detachment, or I express it in simple English, saying no. To learn to say no, that you will have to do, although you don't like to say no, you have to learn. Krishna, no, 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 no. You have to say like this. It's in the Bhagavatam. It is said the best way to deal with a rebellious mind is to ignore it. Ignore it. No. Just the mind. Psychologists have found out when there comes a desire which is harmful for you, and you don't act upon it, after 10 minutes it becomes weaker. It's only in the very beginning where it's so strong. So if you learn to say no and ignore it, it will lose its vicious strength. So good. Any question? Yes. See the children in the tree? I was like this when I was a boy. Only meet me in the trees.
Hare Krishna. Well, sometimes there is also a thought of the other side, which tells you also, why be so much spiritual? Let's be real. Yes, we have body and it's like a practical thought. And so, could you give like an advice or solution? What to do in this situation?
Sometimes on this, I will repeat the question on the spiritual path. We may do something which we are not suited to do. And then there's a voice in us, soft little voice, which says, be real, be more real. I mean, if it's something very, let us say, where you can really see this is the voice of the devil inside, I'm saying it like this, then you must say no. But sometimes it may be an intelligent voice which says, yes, look, maybe you should change something in your life and become more connected with the reality. Now, when you are not sure which voice it is it a voice which is harmful for you, or is it a voice which is favorable and good for you, it really helps to wait a little and after some time to discuss with some close friends who know you, who live at the same place as you and who have observed you. And then you can see. I have always recommended devotees who came to such a situation in their life where they were not sure if they needed to change something or not, that it's good to find an answer by speaking with devotees who know you. Sometimes the answer is composed of different statements. It's almost like a puzzle. In order to complete the puzzles, you need several pieces. And our life is sometimes also in need of several pieces, several answers from several perspectives. And then it usually becomes clear. I would like to give an example which is very, in our community, very open, very often there. Sometimes devotees who have lived in celibacy as brahmacharis asked, is this the right situation for my life, or is it maybe better if I enter a responsible relationship with one partner, one lady partner, and so on? But they are going back and forth. No, it's much more uncomplicated if I stay a brahmachari. I will also not need to take care of an apartment and work and so on. But then there are other aspects, etc. So to arrive at a good answer, it is very good if you speak with several devotees, some of them brahmacharis who can give a good, or celibate monks who can give a good perspective for this direction, and others also responsible grihasthas. And after some time, it's really amazing of collecting different answers. It's almost like puzzle pieces coming together, and whoop, here it is, you can see the picture, and you immediately feel, if it resonates, that this is the right way. I should stay a brahmachari. I should think more seriously about entering the Grihastha ashram. You can see it, you feel it resonates, wow, this has the sound of truth, and so on. And with it you will get the strength. So I wanted to give, address this question. I know this was, I know I've taken your question a little bit in a different context, but I felt it is very beneficial to do so. Good. Gaur Govinda.
Sometimes endeavoring to change our nature, or to bring it to the right path, takes a lot of our energy and focus, and it keeps us a little bit away of surrendering or acknowledging our own defeat or our own insignificance. And I don't know how to express, but it's...
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So how do we...
How do we go about here? Yes. I very, very much like the answer of Kadamba, His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, to this question. It takes so much effort to change one's... I mean, the question is, can we really change one's nature? But I know what you mean, to do the right thing and to come on the right course in life. It's so much effort. How is it possible? I mean, psychologists have tried this. Whew, it's a big business nowadays around this, you know. I would like to do like this or come there. Yeah, do this, and come next week to my again for consultation, and then I have come to a conclusion in which I would like to share with you. To change one's course in life is in fact difficult if you do it alone, but it becomes very easy if Krishna helps you, if there's a divine help from above. And I like this example this divine help comes. Your heart gets purified, for sure, if you are chanting the holy names. And Kadamba Kanana Maharaj gave a very interesting example, how the course of our life changes if we engage our tongue in chanting the holy name. He spoke of a very multi-ton heavy oil tanker, you know, which goes, starts in Rijeka, it goes through the Adriatic Sea, it goes through the Gulf Coast, it goes around Gibraltar, Spain, it is coming to Southampton Harbour in England, and it, no one can stop that oil tanker, no one. But if it is going to change, there is one little small thing under the oil tanker. It's the rudder. You know, rudder? It's a small little thing. And if you go levo, then all of a sudden the oil tanker goes desno, I think it's this opposite, no? The little rudder, little thing, can influence a huge thing from here to there, you know, I mean, in proportions, if I give the proportion. So your life is huge. Oh, it's complex. Artist. Sportsman. Genius. Everything. So much complexity. But if you use your little rudder, the little tongue, in vibrating the holy name. Vibrate, vibrate, vibrate. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Then after some time, you would see, oops, my life goes desno. and you will notice so much good desno in my life, you know. So much good direction in my life. This, you notice, and you can't explain it. How does this little vibrating thing, how has it such a huge effort? It is, bhakti cannot be understood with the intelligence. It is in a realm which is spiritual, which there our mind tries to go, but it returns empty-handed. It cannot understand. But you can watch, you can see. You can see. That is my conviction, and I have seen with objectively. I don't want to speak about me, but yes, even a person like me, who's not so talented, something good has happened in the life. Yeah. Dobra. Yes, this will be our last question. Please wait, you will get your microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for this wonderful lecture. A question arises in my mind regarding our nature, maybe lower nature, and our spiritual nature, which is true nature, eternal nature, as being eternal servants of Krishna. And somehow I observe many devotees like really struggle, like you mentioned, this devil and God trying to own a human being whose it belongs. So one created body, the other one created soul and eternal spirit. And I'm wondering who actually created devil then? I mean, in Jungian analysis, in Jungian psychology, we know this term of simbolo and diabolo. So, simbolo is a meaning of symbolic connection, of connecting, and diabolo in meaning of analysis of fractionating and separating. So I'm wondering if our spiritual practice is actually a process of more and more connecting and seeing the divine and Krishna, like to have these eyes of this pramana of Krishnanizing the world, and not to be so much afraid of Maya.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I would like to ask you if you could comment how to maybe include our nature more in the service of Krishna and Krishnanize it, and not condemn ourselves so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
This distinction between God and devil is a typical Christian thing. It is not really the perspective of Krishna consciousness. There is who created the devil? It's very simple, Krishna. There is no two opposites, so to say. There's only one Lord who's really everywhere, and even the so-called, let me say, negative forces, the things which we perceive as negative, serve a very, very important role in the overall plan. Now coming to the actual gist of this, the Ayurveda speaks of three natures, not just two. It's a spiritual nature, that is your eternal spiritual self, and then it speaks of a higher nature, material, being in the heart or something. It's in the material nature, which is the forces which are wanting good, and then there is a lower nature. So, not just two. This is the Christian perspective. Much more. So, what you do is you use your higher nature, which you have, which is there with you, your talents, your desires, and so on, to see that the lower nature, which is also there, is kept at the proper place. And in this way, you are successful as a spiritual soul on your way back home, back to God. It's a very nice point which you raised, and I'm grateful because the answer to this question gives us a very handy tool for our spiritual journey. We just can see there are different sides in me, and I can choose between them to use my higher self in ways which are more conducive, which will bring me more in harmony with my real self, my eternal being, and which helps my soul to dance. Krishna. I recognize this very much in my life. There was one aspect in me which I'm actually embarrassed to admit. I was very much liking to dance. Very much like to dance as a young man. And I still remember when I started to really dance, the whole discotheque went to the side, everyone stepped to the side, and they just looked at me dancing. I have a great dancing ability. And I thought, oh, I like to dance so much. But if I dance for me, I don't want that all the devotees step aside and look, wow, look at this. He really dances very cool. I don't like this any longer. As a young man who was in the world, I liked to do this and be self-centered and be appreciated. Now I think I should dance for Krishna. It's the same dancing. I mean, different step, but the idea is the same. But now it's for Krishna, and it is very good for self-realization. But still, I know if I really would dance, no one would. Then all the mobile telephones come up. Therefore, I do not dance in the Hare Krishna move. I dance when I'm alone in the nature. So good. It's a nature, but you have to see that it is not controlled by the lower nature, and it's not good for your spiritual life. You have to see that it is used for Krishna. Thank you very much. So I will end here. Hare Krishna. Thank you.